You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey everybody, welcome to Flight Deck, an inside look at the New York Jets. I'm your host, Rich Savini. I cover the Jets for ESPN. Season is over, the streak is over, and the Jets-Patriots rivalry, as we know it, is over. With the news on Thursday that Bill Belichick is moving on, there's a lot to digest here. We're going to cover it all, and we're going to look ahead into the offseason. And in our second segment, we're going to talk to former Jets GM Mike Tannenbaum, cover a lot of these topics, including stuff on Belichick. Mike worked for Belichick, worked for him, worked with him, and I'm curious to get his take on it. The big news around the NFL, of course, right now is the coaching carousel, 8 openings, head coaching-wise. Status quo with the Jets. As you guys know, Robert Saleh will be back for a 4th year. He said on Monday, Baggy Day, that he is not planning any significant changes on his staff. Now, there's been a lot of talk about offensive line coach Keith Carter. Now, you may recall that I told you last week on this podcast that Carter was not universally beloved by his players. And now you have a couple of players hinting on social media that basically that's the case. He's not going anywhere, folks. The feeling in the organization is that the run game improved later in the year. Carter had to deal with a ton of injuries and that he deserves another shot. Now, he's a Saleh guy. Saleh wanted him. He hired him last year. And Keith Carter is not going anywhere, even though the Jets allowed the most sacks from the center and right tackle positions. They tied for the most sacks at left guard. And they're tied for the second most sacks at left tackle. So you get the picture. Those stats are according to Next Gen. The offensive line was a mess, but Keith Carter is coming back. But let's get into the weeds a little bit here. We're going to look ahead to the offseason. Let's talk about how they can fix that offensive line. It won't be easy, of course. I think you could be looking at 3 or 4 new starters. The Jets have only $12.3 million in projected cap space and no second-round pick. In other words, not as much flexibility as past years. And they don't even have a lot of easily cuttable contracts, which is kind of hard to believe. Usually on losing teams, there's a lot of dead wood. Not so with the Jets. So they're going to have some tough decisions coming up ahead of the free agency part of the calendar. And there's going to be a surprise or two. There's going to have to be for the Jets to operate. They're going to have to make some room. Now, let's jump into it a little bit. If they cut C.J. Uzomah and Laken Tomlinson, they're going to save close to $17 million. If they trade Zach Wilson, which I believe they will do, they can save another $5.5 million. But that's if the other team picks up his $5.5 million in compensation for 2024. And let's be realistic. There is no team in the league that is going to want to pay Zach Wilson $5.5 million next year. So the Jets are going to have to eat some of that, cutting into the amount of cap savings they would receive. The Jets can restructure some deals. They got JFM at $16.4 million. That is large. They could look at C.J. Mosley, who for the second straight year has got $21.5 million on the cap. However, not really a smart thing when you restructure a 32-year-old linebacker. So, again, not a lot of places where they can save money. If they cut Uzomah and Tomlinson, they can get to about $30 million under the cap. You know, maybe, you know, redo a deal or two, get to $30, $35 million. But again, that's not a huge amount of money. I mean, the Patriots are going into this offseason with $70 million in cap space. So for the first time in years, the cap is a factor for the Jets. That's why it's going to be hard for them to go out and get one of those top receivers in free agency. You're talking $20 million or more for a free agency and to fix the offensive line? It's going to be tough. The offensive tackle market is slim. There's a lot of older players in this market, and that's why I'm thinking maybe it wouldn't be a bad idea for the Jets to go for an older short-term player. Tyron Smith of Dallas is 34. He is still an outstanding pass blocker, but he's got the age, and he has missed a bunch of games in recent years, missed four games this year. But when he's out there, he's awesome. A lot of starting centers in free agency. So let's try to envision a scenario like this. Say the Jets sign Aaron Brewer from Tennessee, a center. They could move Tippmann to guard, move AVT to right tackle, keep Tomlinson on a pay cut, and then draft a left tackle. All of a sudden, different looking offensive line. If Joe Alt or Olu Fashanu is there at 10, that's an obvious one to me. If neither one of those guys is there, you trade down. You can pick a Tyler Guyton from Oklahoma or an Amarius Mims from Georgia, both tackles, and then recoup the second-round pick you gave to the Packers in the Aaron Rodgers trade. So this is going to take some creative roster building by Joe Douglas. That's why these mid-round draft picks are so important, because those are the guys who have to develop into your starters in year two and year three. And I want to mention the name of Carter Warren. He played close to 400 snaps this year at right tackle, so the Jets got a good look at him. He did some positive things in the latter part of the year. Last three games, 10 pressures, only one sack allowed, which is not bad. If the Jets believe in him, they can keep AVT at right guard, keep Tippmann at center, replace Tomlinson at left guard, and draft the left tackle. So Carter Warren, of all people in the Jets' offensive line puzzle, is a very, very key player in the entire equation. Because if they have enough belief in him to roll with him as a starter, it'll solve so many problems. Again, I don't know whether they deem him that valuable. Certainly would be a backup, like a swing tackle backup. But if they can see him as a starter, it's going to solve a lot of problems for the Jets. I think the Jets are in a two-year window right now. With the cap restrictions, just the way contracts are structured, they are in a two-year window, because here you go. Sauce Gardner, Garrett Wilson, Jermaine Johnson, and Breece Hall, they've all got 2 years left on their contract. That's not counting fifth-year options for the first three guys. So those guys are all on the ascent, and they're all going to get big, big bucks. With Sauce and Garrett Wilson, you could be looking at top-of-the-market contracts for those guys, maybe even Breece Hall as well. So probably going to be hard to keep all four of those guys, but you know that you have them for two more years. Rodgers says he wants to play two more years. And by the way, if he plays two in 2026, the cap charge in that that's a void year on his contract, $63 million in the year 2026, further reinforcing the belief that this is a two-year window, because it's going to be really hard after 2025. So it's a two-year window, and it's going to be hard to fill the holes this year. You're talking, like, for a wide receiver, it's going to be over $20 million for Michael Pittman, T. Higgins. Those might be out of their price range. Maybe you settle for a Calvin Ridley. Mike Evans, to me, would be a good fit, but he's so loyal to the Bucs. Would he ever leave Tampa Bay? That's a question. Now, Devontae Adams, it's going to be real interesting with him. Keep an eye on the Raiders' head coaching search, because we know Adams has already come out publicly lobbying for Antonio Pierce to keep that job. If they don't hire Pierce as the full-time coach, I would have to think that Devontae Adams might want out of Las Vegas. And I would, you know, for the Jets, you hate to give up the compensation, because you're probably talking at least a second-round pick, perhaps a three this year and a two next year. But he's got the Rodgers factor, and you know Rodgers is going to be lobbying for him. So that's why Devontae Adams would make sense. They could fit him in cap-wise this year. He's making $17 million this year. Tight squeeze probably impacts what they can do on the offensive line. Like I said, tough situation for the Jets because of the cap situation. I think there's going to be a surprise move this offseason, either a cut or a trade. And I'm not talking about the Zach Wilson trade, because I think we consider that a foregone conclusion. But the Jets might have to trade one of their promising young players to try to get back, you know, a draft capital or open up some cap room. And that's why I'm thinking of a guy like Michael Carter, really good slot corner. Want to keep him, of course, but, you know, maybe you could trade him for something, a draft pick that they could use. You hate to trade a guy on a team-friendly contract, but to get good things, you have to trade good things. What about a DJ Reed? You know, really outstanding corner in the prime of his career. I think they would want to keep Sauce Gardner for the long term, so maybe DJ Reed is a guy you think you could part with. Tough decisions ahead for the Jets, but these are tough decisions that have to be made just to create some flexibility along the way, because like I said, the cap squeeze is going to hit this year, and they have to get this offensive line fixed, because if they don't, man, you just don't want to relive another Aaron Rodgers nightmare.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's always a pleasure to bring in this guest. He's been on the show before. He of course, is the former Jets general manager, a former executive vice president with the Dolphins, current ESPN analyst, and a proud graduate of the University of Massachusetts. Of course, it's Mike Tannenbaum. Mike, thank you so much for taking the time.
Really appreciate you having me, and good to be with you as always, Rich.
Yes, yes. And of course, we're doing this, we're taping this on Thursday. And of course, Mike, you know, big news with Bill Belichick in New England, no longer the Patriots coach. Now, you have a unique perspective on this because you worked under Bill Belichick. You worked with Bill Belichick. I think it was like 1995, right? Weren't you a pro personnel, assistant with the Browns just as a young whippersnapper? What was that like?
Yeah, I just graduated from law school at Tulane, and you know, I had this dream about working in sports, and I was very, very lucky that Coach Belichick hired me with the Browns. I worked for him, Mike Lombardi, Scott Pioli. I think there was 8 GMs and 6 head coaches on that staff. It was I literally drove people to the airport. It was a remarkable time.
So you probably didn't have a lot of interaction with Bill then, right? I mean, you were probably in a different part of the building, I would think.
No, I got his car, you know, filled it up with gas. And he actually wanted to hire me to start like researching the salary cap. I think it says a lot about his attention to detail, Rich, that, you know, he was one of the first people to understand that understanding the cap and using it as competitive advantage would help his team. And, you know, I was really hired to, again, like very low level, but then also, you know, help with, you know, salary cap research.
Certainly not shocking news that he's no longer the Patriots coach. Just looking at it from a global viewpoint, just his impact on the game and what it'll mean not to have him in that AFC East anymore.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of people listening to your podcast today that are taking a really, really, really big sigh of relief. And I think, you know, if I'm the Jets, you know, I've been waiting for this day, and now it's here, and, you know, can they take advantage of it moving forward because they no longer have to compete with Bill Belichick up north.
You have such a great perspective on this because you were with him. You know, he of course, was the Jets defensive coordinator from 97 to 99, and then he left. And then you had to compete against him for many, many years in the border war rivalry, as Bill Parcells used to call it. What was it like just, like, you were with them in meetings with the Jets, and you guys had tremendous success in 98 with Parcells and Testaverde. What was it like being on his team during that period?
It was awesome. You know, he taught me so much just about preparation, but, you know, there was another side of him, Rich. He really was just a great guy. He's a family man. His attention to detail was unbelievable. Thought he was like also, I think one of the sort of like hallmarks of intelligence is somebody that could take a lot of information and distill it. And he could do that. And the simplicity of his game plans were tremendous. So I learned so much from him.
Where were you on that famous day when he resigned as the HC of the NYJ and that infamous press conference? Where were you in the building?
I'll never forget it. The day started off and I was going to do some projects for him, you know, as the new head coach. And literally like an hour or two later, Rich, I remember it was like yesterday, Parcells comes down to my office and he's like, "Hey, Belichick resigned, you know, come into the conference room." And, then it was like on to Al Groh, but I was there and it was surreal. And then Coach Parcells and Woody Johnson had talked to Kraft about, you know, working out an arrangement where he was an elite team.
Yeah, I mean, it was just an incredible day. I mean, so you had a bird's eye view for some of the most interesting chapters in Jet history, because he goes up to New England. Of course, he struggles for a year, you know, and then goes to the Super Bowl the second year. What was it like all of a sudden? I mean, could you tell that he was going to be that good of a coach? I mean, because when he left the Jets, no one thought like that Vince Lombardi was walking out the door. I mean, let's be honest.
Yeah, no, look. Again, I'm very biased. The guy hired me twice, and I thought he was, again, to this day, Rich, his attention to detail. You could ask coaches that are, you know, coach with him. You know, his Saturday night meetings were way harder than the games. Like, he would literally ask you, like, where is the backup snapper from, or their third quarterback? What are the two things he does exceptionally well? His attention to detail was just incredibly rare.
Of course, you know, you had so much respect for him that you hired, you know, one of his chief lieutenants in Eric Mangini. And that really started off a different era for the Jets, you know, with Mangini, the Mangini Tannenbaum ticket in 06. And of course, you guys went to the playoffs that year. And I'm just wondering, did your relationship with Bill change at all when you hired Eric? Because there was all that, you know, that wasn't the easiest transition for Eric or Bill probably. And then of course you had Spygate in 07, which was a Jet Patriot thing. How did the relationship evolve after those two events?
Yeah, look, I think he always, you know, knew that we were going to do what was best for us, and we knew he was going to do what was best for them, and always have had a ton of respect and, you know, a lot of admiration for Coach Belichick. And, you know, we've always been able to have a very, you know, courteous professional relationship.
You get, now, for those who don't know, you were in Foxborough on Sunday. You were doing the game for ESPN Radio. Do you get recognized at all when you're up at Gillette Stadium, being a former Jets and Dolphins executive?
It's funny, you know, I do, you know, and it's home for me. Graduated from Needham High School, graduated from UMass, as you mentioned. So it's a very special place. But more and more, Rich, like, people actually know me more from being with ESPN, which is just, you know, it's a really, like, it's a funny thing for me.
Yeah, interesting. Were you a Patriots fan growing up?
That was my hometown team. And
yeah,
I was born in New York, but when right now my dad got a job in the Boston area, and, you know, that's what I consider my hometown.
Al, you got a good look at the Jets in person. I just want to shift to what the Jets are facing now. Of course, a 7-10 season, not what they envisioned this year with Aaron Rodgers going down. The narrative coming out of the Jets on Monday during their baggy day was that we are closer than it appears to being a championship level team. What's the take from your chair? Do you think the Jets are closer than their record would indicate?
Yeah, I don't know about that. I thought they would have played more consistently this year. You know, it's something you and I, and I appreciate you joining us each and every Sunday morning with Amani Toomer and Anita Marks on our show. But, you know, look, there's certainly, you know, there's the ability there. I really think what the Cleveland Browns did was really sort of like eviscerate any, you know, notion of an excuse when you think about losing Jack Conklin and Jedrick Wills, two really good tackles. They're on their fourth quarterback. They lost their best offensive player in Nick Chubb. And, you know, they're in the playoffs. So I just think, you know, it starts with their head coach. I think there's a lot of talent on the New York Jets. And I just think they have to put excuses behind them and this and that. And, you know, Coach Parcells said it, you know, a generation ago, but it still applies today. Like, you are what your record is, and everybody has injuries. Everybody's going to, you know, and like, there's just there, that whole mindset just has to shift there, that just go win games. You know, it's not about anything else but winning games. And yeah, it was disappointing just to see the season unfold the way it did, just given, you know, the hopes and expectations they had.
You said a moment ago that it starts with the head coach. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, I just felt like there was a lot of times, like, he would remind everybody, like, what he didn't have. And to me, the great coaches are the ones that remind you what they do have and how to get the most out of them. You know, we could talk about Bill Belichick and Nick Saban, but, you know, I've been in meetings with them going back to, you know, draft meetings where they want to know what you can do and be game plan specific. And I think part of the dogma of coaching in this day and age is this whole notion of it's the scheme. It's not about the scheme. It's about the players you have each week. And I think they have to become, that mindset has to be more pervasive.
So when Aaron Rodgers comes out on Monday and says, we need to flush the BS, you are certainly aware of that comment, I'm sure. What did you make of it? And in a sense, are you saying the same thing, that the Jets need to just flush the excuses and the injury and that sort of thing? So would you agree with what Rodgers said?
Yeah, I didn't really understand what Aaron Rodgers meant by that. You know, it's not fair of me to comment. I'm not in the building every day, but, you know, what I can comment on are the comments that are made at press conferences and things like that. Again, I just think that the more successful and consistent organizations, Rich, are the ones where, you know, they win, and they don't make it about anything but that, and they don't remind you that they don't have this quarterback or not. Again, you know, right now, like, you look at the Browns, and Deshaun Watson is every good as, you know, Aaron Rodgers, and you never heard them say, well, we don't have Deshaun Watson, you know, or we don't have Nick Chubb, or we don't have our starting tackles. They just found a way to win. And again, we talked about this a lot. I thought the defense had a couple of opportunities this year, Rich, to really take a stand, and they didn't. And to me, you really have to start with humility and say, we were, you know, we're 0-0, and we have to earn greatness. It's not proclamations in the preseason or anything like that. It's, you know, less said and more production is what they need to do.
Knowing you as well as I think I do, based from your history as the GM, you would attack the Jets' offensive line issue, because, you know, that's obviously a weakness for the Jets. I, knowing the Mike Tannenbaum that I think I do, you'd go out and, like, make a trade, do something to address that weakness. What would you do if you were the Jets? I mean, how do you fix that? Because they might need, like, an entirely new offensive line. How do you attack that issue?
Yeah, I think it's more of, like, a mindset, you know, a mindset of, like, hey, and by the way, like, when I say this, like, I think Joe Douglas does a really good job, and I'm not saying he doesn't have this mindset, but, you know, if you're asking me about me and my mindset, it's just, you know, a relentlessness each and every day of, you know, and this is ironically something that Bill Belichick and Bill Parcells literally talked about every day, Rich, which was, you know, roster improvement. People in the media, you know, ourselves included, are going to focus in on, you know, Mekhi Becton, or, you know, whatever first round pick is playing great or not playing up to expectations, whatever the case may be. But, you know, to have sustained success, you've got to improve your roster from the bottom up as well. And you have to churn it, and you have to keep adding and developing. And maybe one of the more unsung heroes in this conversation is a guy like Bill Callahan, who just kept taking one offensive lineman after the other in Cleveland, and they put together a really good season. And to me, it's more about a mindset to say, hey, we're going to scour, we're going to improve, we're going to coach, and we're going to get these guys better. And when they're out there, we're going to win games, and we're not going to make excuses of what we don't have. And some weeks we're going to run it 50 times, some weeks we're going to throw it 50 times. But whatever gives us the best chance this week with this group of players, that's what we're going to do.
I remember in 98, now correct me if I'm wrong, if I'm telling the story not incorrectly, but center was, like, on the top of your list and Bill's list, Parcells, of one of their offseason needs. And you guys go out and boom, you get Kevin Mawai, who's in the Hall of Fame right now. Cost a lot of money, but well worth it. I mean, was that you recall that? I mean, that was just an example of, like, knowing you had a need and going out and getting it done.
Yeah, I mean, I think that happened a lot. And again, we weren't perfect, but be it Alan Faneca, Damian Woody, Mawai, you know, it was just a mindset. You know, like, for me, I was the assistant GM and saw in 05 lose two starting quarterbacks in seven snaps between Chad Pennington and Jay Fiedler. I don't really care what we do, but until we get this offensive line worked out, nothing else matters.
Of course, the following spring, you draft Nick Mangold and DeBrickashaw Ferguson, which basically gave the Jets the two pillars on their offensive line for the next decade or so. So that worked out pretty well. If the Jets could do that again, that would be ideal, you know. But unfortunately, the Jets don't have two first-round picks, and they don't even have a second-round pick. How hard is it? Do you think the Jets can be in the playoffs next year? I mean, is that realistic, or how realistic is that?
I think so. I mean, seven teams make the playoffs, right, out of 16. So, absolutely they can. It just, again, to me, it's about, let's talk less. Let's have less, predictions and who we're going to be. And let's just go out there and get better, get coached up, and come up with game plan specific, game plans each week that, give us the best chance with whoever we have. You look at the playoffs, Rich, Miami just basically, it was like a hockey line, right? Jalen Phillips and Bradley Chubb and Van Ginkel go out. Now it's going to be Bruce Irvin, Melvin Ingram, and coming in, that's just like where we are as a sport. There were 66 different quarterbacks that started a game this year.
Amazing. Yeah. And the Jets contributed four to that number. Okay. I want to wrap with two quick predictions from you, Mike, two head coaching related predictions. Where do you think Bill Belichick ends up?
I don't know if it happens or not, but I always thought in the back of my mind, he would wind up in, Washington. His dad Steve was part of the Naval Football Academy team for the better part of 46 years, I believe, and they need a head coach, they need a GM. I always thought that was a possibility, so we'll see what happens. And he certainly earned the right to coach if he wants to.
Last prediction, Jim Harbaugh, and I want to let the listeners know that you were ahead of the curve on Jim Harbaugh. You interviewed him for the Jets head coaching job back in 2009, I believe, when he was a relatively unknown coach at Stanford at that particular time, and of course went on to great success at Stanford and the 49ers and et cetera, et cetera, and won a national championship in Michigan. What do you recall about meeting Harbaugh way back when for that interview, and where do you think he ends up?
Yeah, he... kind of what you see is what you get. Very smart, very competitive. And I think where he can wind up, Rich, moving forward, to me, the Chargers and the Raiders make sense. Two places he has a connection. If the Bears are open, I'd certainly throw them into the mix as well.
Yeah, it looks like the Bears are, sticking with Eberflus, but that would have been a possibility. Hopefully he'll stay at Michigan, so that would, I think that would be great. But we know college football has changed in recent years with the transfer portal and everything, and NCAA infractions possibly. So maybe he goes to the pros. It wouldn't surprise anyone, but that would be kind of cool. So you imagine if you hired him back then, how life would have been different for the Jets. But you had Rex Ryan. That was a great hire. You guys went to the playoffs the first 2 years, so that worked out nicely.
Yeah, and Rex certainly, didn't lack confidence either. So,
you're drawn to the people who are brash with a lot of confidence, I guess.
Those guys. Let me tell you this, Rich. Look, I've been very fortunate to be around, bunch of coaches and all. Those two men have more similarities than people think.
Really? In what way?
They're brash. They're smart. They're confident. They make their players better.
Yeah. Well, no doubt about it. Those guys were proven coaches. And hey, Mike, it was really fun catching up. I know we do it on Sunday mornings, but it's usually split in time with Anita and Imani. So it was good to have this little catch-up time here, a little one-on-one time. And enjoy your off-season. I'll probably see you somewhere at a scouting combine or some sort of event. But I really appreciate you taking time and giving us a few minutes.
Thanks so much, Rich. Really appreciate it.
Who's ready for some mailbag action? I am, and we're going to lead it off with at Cam McLaurin. Rich, I understand Keith Carter was a priority hire for Saleh, but can you shed some light on what it is about the guy that rubs his players the wrong way? Well, we don't know. We have to be careful about how we phrase that, Cam. You're saying rubs makes it sound like rubs all the players the wrong way. And to be clear, no player has publicly criticized Keith Carter. What I said in previous podcasts and reiterated in this podcast was information culled from private conversations on background. Also, you had Breece Hall and Mekhi Becton sort of hinting on social media this week a dislike for Keith Carter. Got to be careful with stuff like that. But I do think, as I've said earlier, he is not universally beloved by his players. I think the whole cut blocking thing at the beginning of the year was part of it. The players didn't want to do it. It backfired in the worst way possible on the Rodgers injury, and they eliminated it immediately from the playbook. I think another thing is the way he calls out players in meetings and in practice. I think that might rub some players the wrong way. And the fact that, you know, I think some players like their coaches to have been former players. I think that carries a certain amount of cachet with players. And Keith Carter did not play on a professional level. He played a little bit at UCLA, and his career was ended by an injury that was suffered in an accident. He was, you know, in a motorcycle and hit a truck and had a serious hip injury and could no longer play. So I don't even know if the players know that stuff, but I think a lot of players, not only offensive linemen, like knowing that they're learning from a former player. So that may be a small part of it, and he's not going anywhere, but it is something to watch going forward. At Pat_O'Connor0324, why is everyone so against drafting a quarterback? You know, just have him sit behind Rodgers and learn. And he mentioned some other examples, including Alex Smith and Patrick Mahomes' situation several years ago with the Chiefs. Patrick, you raise a good point, and this will be a talking point as we get closer to the draft, because you could make the argument that the Jets should draft an eventual replacement for Rodgers. Now that we know Zach Wilson will probably be moving on, Rodgers is 40 years old. There's some quarterbacks in this draft. Now we know Caleb Williams and Drake May will probably be gone. Jaden Daniels also could be gone. But what if J.B.J. McCarthy is sitting there at 10 for the Jets? Could they draft McCarthy, sit him for a couple of years, and have him take over for Rodgers? I would be shocked if something like that happens. I think the Jets are in win-now mode, and I don't think they will draft a quarterback. I think they'll draft someone who could help immediately. But, like I said, it's a strong case there because, I mean, for the good of the long-term health of the organization, you should always have a quarterback in the pipeline. It's the old Ron Wolf philosophy. But right now, if Wilson is gone, the Jets don't have an answer, a long-term answer in the pipeline. And like I said, I think it'll be a talking point as we get closer to April. At Crivo Rich, how often do teams with bottom-tier offensive lines turn their fortunes after one season? He mentions the draft and free agency, coaching changes. Well, classic example, 2021 Kansas City Chiefs. They lose the Super Bowl to Tampa Bay. You all remember that game. Mahomes was running for his life. So they flipped that offensive line in one offseason. They changed four starters. They signed Orlando Brown and Joe Tooney as free agents, and they drafted Creed Humphrey and Trey Smith, neither of which, by the way, a first-round pick, and they completely revamped that offensive line in one offseason. So, yes, it can be done. It's very difficult. It requires several savvy moves, but it can be done. At Lapari Tom, what are we realistically getting back for Zach Wilson? Tom, do not expect a lot. Late-round draft pick this year, perhaps even next year. Just not a lot of interest there. I looked this up. Since 2000, Zach Wilson is ranked 108th out of 112 quarterbacks in total QBR. That is based on a minimum of 900 attempts. Not a lot of market value for Zach Wilson. At Ryan D. Fallon, if the Jets decide they want to tag and trade Bryce Huff, who are the potential suitors and what would they get in return? Let me clear this up, Ryan, and all the other Jet fans out there who think the Jets are going to trade or tag Bryce Huff. I would be very surprised if that happens because the projected franchise tag for a defensive end is going to be $23 million. As I said earlier, the Jets have cap restrictions. I do not see them devoting $23 million in cap space for a player who plays about
45 to 50% of the snaps. Now, they could get back that cap space if they trade him. But ask yourself this, what player, what team out there would want to give up compensation in the form of a draft pick, let's say a second round pick, and pay an enormous contract to Bryce Huff? Now, I am not taking anything away from Bryce Huff, who had 10 sacks. He's a terrific pass rusher, but he's not an every down player. At least I don't believe he is. And I don't think teams are going to give up huge money and premium compensation for a Bryce Huff. I would be surprised if the Jets tag him. I think they will try very hard to sign him before free agency. And if they don't sign him before he hits the open market, I think he'll be gone because the price will keep going up. Next question from at EtonN33. Why did Rodgers wear a headset on the sideline? Did he have power to overrule plays? I think he did it just to be in the flow of things, to feel like he was a part of things. He monitored conversations. I don't think he was calling plays. I don't think he was overruling plays. I think he was offering suggestions, maybe between plays or between series, but I don't think he had a huge role on the headsets. And interesting question here to wrap it up. At DMDJDJDJL. That was a tough one. Rich, any word on Elijah Vera Tucker's recovery? It feels like probably the most important question for the Jets this offseason. Is he going to be ready for week one? We spoke to AVT on Monday. He said he kind of punted when asked if he'd be ready for week one. He says they have not discussed that yet. I believe he will be ready for week one. He had this surgery in October. He also referred to this as a non-traditional Achilles tear. And this really jibes with what I was told at the time of the injury, that it's really an upper calf kind of Achilles as opposed to the traditional lower calf Achilles tear. And so I think that probably helped his rehab. I do expect him to be back. I don't know about the start of training camp, but I do believe he'll be ready to go for week one. And you're absolutely right. ABT is a very important person in the grand scheme of things. Let's wrap it up with a quick look ahead to the offseason. I can see this being a quieter offseason than last year, which of course was dominated by the breathless anticipation and hype of the Aaron Rodgers trade going all the way back to February and the infamous darkness retreat and the McAfee proclamation that he wanted to come to the Jets and everything that unfolded after that. That was truly one of the most unique offseasons I've ever covered on the Jets beat. And I don't think we'll have anything to that extent this year. I think things will be quiet for a few weeks. And then just after the Super Bowl, you're going to start to hear these Zach Wilson rumors when the trading season opens, possible destinations for him. It's really impossible to project that now because there's so much coaching movement. I think the coaching movement will dictate, often dictates where a player ends up. So beware of that. And of course, the big news is, you know, the Belichick departure. And he of course will always be linked in some way to the Jets. He did spend three seasons with the Jets, 97 through 99, as Bill Parcells' right-hand man. He was the defensive coordinator. Of course, he resigned with that crazy press conference, goes on to New England, and basically torments the Jets for 20 years. The Jets, of course, getting the last laugh, if you could call it that, last Sunday in New England where they won the snow game. I know a lot of players were really happy in the locker room after that. C.J. Mosley telling me that it was almost like a symbolic win for the Jets, even though it had no playoff implications. It was almost as if they were starting to change the history. And only time will tell if that turns out to be true. But one quick Belichick story. I got to know him when he was with the Jets. And I remember one year I had, in those days, the assistant coaches were not allowed to talk to the media, or at least they weren't under Bill Parcells. And there were no league rules at the time that mandated it. So it was basically the Parcells rules. And I had requested to Belichick to do an interview with him. And so we did a clandestine interview at the Chicago Hyatt Hotel the day of the Jet Bears preseason finale.
I wanted to sit down and do some interviewing with Belichick. He invited me into his inner sanctum. They were already looking ahead to week one. They were opening against the Niners in 1998, so they weren't even thinking about the Bears. They were all focused on week one. So I went into Belichick's film room, which is like a makeshift ballroom at the Hyatt. It was lined with VHS tapes of the San Francisco 49ers. Mind you, this is the pre-digital age. Everything was on VHS in those days. And if you don't know what that is, young kids, just Google it. And so we had all these stacks of tape lined up of Steve Young and Jerry Rice. And I sat down with Belichick for about an hour. And Parcells did not know we were doing this interview. And in fact, I'm pretty sure that Belichick kind of chuckled and kind of reveled in that fact that he was pulling this off without the big man knowing he was doing it. And so we sat there and we watched tape for about an hour. And really, he was pointing out little subtle things on tape with Steve Young and some of the receivers and the way they were lined up. You could tell which way the routes were going to go based on the alignment of their feet and their hands. It was really an education in football. And I was always grateful that he was able to take that time and share it with me. And I ended up writing a story probably that week on Belichick and how smart he was. And the Jets ended up losing that game to the Niners in overtime, in fact. But the Jets went on to have a great year in 98, made it all the way to the championship game. And Belichick stuck around for another year. And then, of course, he was off to New England. But I do have some stories like that of where he did make some time for me. So the guy, grumpy guy you see at the press conference with a scowl, is not always the guy who he really is. He did make time for reporters behind the scenes. Don't know if he did that in New England. Have no idea. But I know he did with me as we sat in a dark room watching Steve Young and laughing at the fact that Bill Parcells was somewhere in that hotel, not knowing what was going on at that very moment. So we got to laugh over that. I wish Belichick luck in his next endeavor. I guarantee he'll be coaching somewhere. Be interesting if he's on the Jets schedule next year. Once again, I want to thank Mike Tannenbaum for joining us. Thanks to Jeff Scopin for putting this all together all year. We're going to take a little break on Flight Deck. We're going to come back as news warrants in the offseason. Can't thank you enough for spending so much time with us week after week through the season. I've enjoyed doing this. I hope you enjoyed it along the way, maybe learned something along the way. Thanking all our guests. We've had some great guests this year. Want to thank them. And I really appreciate your support and suggestions and feedback. And we'll talk real soon on Flight Deck.